You're listening to The Weather Junkies.
Oh, boy.
Large wedge tornado coming up into Texas.
A winter storm warning is in effect for our area.
We can expect at least another 2 to 4 inches overnight.
The National Weather Service in Huntsville has issued a tornado warning for northwestern Mississippi.
14 to 22 inches of snow!
Good Thursday evening. Thank you for joining us here on The Weather Junkies. I'm Tyler Jankowski, joining the show this night from Connecticut. And we have a very special guest on. We'll get to in a moment. First, though, Dakota Smith in Colorado.
Hey, Tyler, and thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. In Colorado, the lovely Fort Collins. It's been pretty chilly, actually, the past few days. Got down to the 30s overnight the past few nights. And didn't get out of the 40s yesterday. Today it was sunny and in the 70s, so I don't have much to complain about. Tyler, the weather back on the East Coast.
Well, let's see. Actually, this past weekend we had some heavy rain, steady rain on Sunday, and that was not in the forecast. So it was a busted forecast big time of the weekend. Did not feel good about that, but we need some rain. We got some rain, about a half inch in this part of the state, up to an inch elsewhere. And now it is, it's sunny for a few days, so there's really no drought relief in sight. We ran the numbers again, and we're down more than 17 inches of rain since the start of 2015. So a remarkable deficit that only grows. It continues to grow.
Yeah, it's no good. Well, tonight we're joined, as Tyler alluded to, by a special guest, Dominic Ramuni. We actually went to school with Dom at Penn State. He got his bachelor's in meteorology, and he's a man of many trades, but right now he's a meteorologist at the Weather Channel, and I'm not actually sure what he does, so we'll get to that in a second. But Dom,
well, that's why we brought him on.
Exactly, yeah. But Dom, thanks for joining us, and how's the weather down in Hotlanta?
Well, thanks for having me, Dakota, Tyler. It's a pleasure, and I want to thank the viewers. For the listeners, I should say, for listening to probably the highest rated Weather Junkie since its inception.
Oh, we're so happy to have you on. We really needed this.
Bold statement, Tom.
Weather's been pretty actually decent down here in Atlanta. Temperatures definitely dropped off the last couple of days, only been in the 70s and low 80s. And the humidity, though, the dew points, my goodness, they've been down in the 40s. So I'll tell you what a world of a difference that makes.
Yeah. Well, we'll get a little bit to more of what you're doing at the Weather Channel, because we're all very interested in that.
Oh, yes.
But right now, let's get into what's kind of trending in the weatherverse right now. And for that, we'll go to a tweet here from Jacob DeFlitch. You can follow him at WXDeFlitch. His tweet says, resident who stayed on Tybee, which is an island, in one of the Carolinas, I believe, he said a lot of the decision came on the fact that meteorologists can't tell you what the weather is going to be day to day. Jacob actually went traveled in some of the damage area of Hurricane Matthew. This is kind of a sad tweet. It's not, you know, you can't really blame someone for, I don't know, thinking something like this. Tyler, what do you think? You have a better kind of overview of what people think from your weather forecast.
Well, we obviously hear this quite frequently, especially when things go wrong. And I think a lot of times it's a joke, but a lot of times it's not a joke. And I think there are some things that we do that contribute to that mentality. And we're certainly not going to stop doing it because we're not in control of those things. I'm not going to name everything. But one example would be showing an hourly forecast or showing a future radar. And, that's what people want to see, and that's what management wants us to show. But a lot of times that can contribute, you could argue, to the idea that we don't know what's going to happen because it's always wrong. So there's always a battle between precision and accuracy. And more often than not, we're forced to err on the side of precision and not accuracy, just because that's the demand. So I think, unfortunately, that contributes to people thinking we don't know what's going on.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of moving pieces with Matthew. You know, it wasn't your ordinary forecast. And we're actually going to, I think at some point, talk with Jacob about his trip to get a little more perspective of what the people were thinking who both evacuated and didn't evacuate.
One addition to that is, as meteorologists, we have a pretty good grasp on what we're confident in and what we're not confident in. But I don't think that makes it through the channels to people that are receiving forecasts. So for people on the end, you know, they don't know what to latch onto, whereas we know what to latch onto, even though if it's blended in and mixed in with other things, unfortunately. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like we may know the impacts of Matthew, but we're forced to give an hourly rain forecast. And that may come off as, oh, geez, they don't know what's going on. But we know what the main points are. It's unfortunate that that's, we have to communicate more than that.
Right. If people say see a 30% chance of showers, then they think it's going to rain. And then when it doesn't, then you're blamed for it. Yeah, no, I see. I know exactly what you're saying. And that's a good point. Let's move on here to our next tweet from Zach Labe. He was a guest on our show this summer. You can follow him at ZLabe. He's a grad student right now. His tweet says, atmospheric river beginning to bring heavy rains to the Pacific Northwest while Hurricane Nicole moves overhead Bermuda. And he shows a beautiful graphic here. And I believe it's showing rainfall. It gives a nice summary of kind of the current state of our atmosphere with Nicole over the Atlantic and then a nice batch of rain and potential flooding that's going to slam the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it looks like precipitable water.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
He got 26 retweets, so that goes along with the idea that a colorful image that has lots of eye candy will get retweeted. I will say I've seen a lot of these tweets here with the atmospheric river coming into the Pacific Northwest. So it must have been a long time since the last one. I suspect that's why there's so many tweets making news about this.
Yeah. So we'll move on, get a little more specific with what's going on in the weather right now from a tweet from Philip Pappin. He's a PhD candidate at University of Albany. You can follow him at PPPIN. And his tweet says, Nicole's eye is becoming larger, warmer, with a broad and still strengthening wind field. Bermuda likely to face a direct hit. This was sent yesterday before it actually hit Bermuda. And Nicole was quite the storm. A lot of eye candy coming out of Nicole. Tyler, I don't know how much you followed it, but there was a lot of discussion about whether this actually made landfall or not, and it didn't make landfall, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I saw, obviously, the beautiful satellite images, a well-defined eye before it got close to, I almost said hit. I guess I could say hit, but that brings me to the next point in is, you know, how do you term it? Is it a landfall? Is it a hit? I agree that you have to get the terminology right. I saw a bit of a Twitter war today, and you know, during the storm and forecasting it and leading up to it, you don't get stuck on that point. You hit on the impacts, but after the fact, when you log it in the science books, you're not going to write that it made landfall if it didn't make landfall. So similar to Sandy, I think you have to communicate effectively, but then you can't gloss over the science when you're logging what actually happened. So I didn't see that. It didn't make landfall officially?
I don't believe it did, no. The center of it has to go over land, and I don't think
I learned that, like a lot of other people did, probably during Matthew. It's the center, so if you think of, like, I don't know, you know, something that you're holding on to and going in a circle, it's the middle that has to hit, and it didn't. I mean, the eye was huge, so the eye definitely came over Bermuda, but the center did not.
Yeah, exactly. And you hit the nail on the head there, because it's not the impacts are what's important. You know, it's a technicality, a scientific kind of definition that's important when you are summarizing it maybe after the fact, but yeah, not important when the forecasts are going out and people are actually getting affected by it. Tyler, you want to take away the next tweet here?
Yeah, our next tweet comes from Brian McLight, and it's a tweet with two photos. He didn't take the photos, but they are two photos in from family in Bermuda, and you know, trying to get a sense for what type of damage occurred today. And the first picture is a road that's washed out, probably will take some time to fix. And the second photo is of some pretty decent flooding in and around some residential structures. So a lot of power was knocked out, and there's definitely damage. I saw tweets from a Bermuda news service, but it doesn't look, I want to say devastating, but if you're impacted, it was, it looks like it could have been worse. I think that's what I want to say.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like they have pretty strict building regulations there. You know, they have a code for building. You have to build it to withstand, you know, some sort of strength in it.
Yeah, it makes sense because, you know, obviously the forecast for strength of was wrong for Nicole, but the first thought I had when I saw the track was, well, geez, you always get storms like that. You know, generally like tropical storms, category one, maybe category two, major hurricanes are rare on Bermuda, but they're pretty well accustomed to tropical systems of weaker strength. So I think that definitely helps them out.
I saw something, some crazy stat that was that said something how Bermuda has gotten hit by more hurricanes than the United States since October 2014. Two hurricane landfalls on the coastal United States and landfalls on Bermuda since October 2014. That's absurd. I don't know.
I mean, it makes sense. The tropical activity comes out of the tropics, and as soon as they get into these latitudes, they enter the prevailing westerly winds, and they curve to the east.
I don't know if it makes sense, though, because just think of how much land, you know, that the coastline has compared to the Bermuda coastline. Like,
I think it's a popular track, though, to curve out to sea in that area.
Surely, I agree with that. Okay, let's move on to our next tweet here from Matt Lanza, good friend of the show. You can follow Matt Lanza. He's he tweets for Space City Weather, does forecasts for them, and works in the energy industry. Matt's tweet says, "What's the scoop for Gozar launch date post Matthew? Been out of the loop since about Saturday. It's actually been delayed. I forget when they're pushing it to, but." I got a good friend over here who's done a lot of work on Gozar, and he told me that will be delayed.
Yeah, this is a nice tweet thread. That's part of the reason why I chose it. And there's a lot of uncertainty in the thread, but one thing that stands out is about a week delay, and apparently this KSC website, I don't know what KSC is, but the website has it pegged for, wait a minute, November 4th. That's that's the original date. But it looks like a minor delay, if there's a delay at all.
Yeah, it didn't sound like that much was impacted, but yeah, there will be some minor delay. You want to lead us into our next one here?
Yeah, this is our final tweet of the night, and it has a lot of graphics on it, so I could see why you'd want me to take the lead, and it's the Northeast. I mean, it's a colorful graphic with precipitation records for the last couple of months, and the one thing that stood out to me was a map of average stream flow for I think over a week period compared to historical stream flow for the day of the year. So basically it's looking at stream flow and comparing it to average, and in Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, Connecticut, even portions of New York and New Jersey, there's a lot of bright red and maroon dots, and those dots are indicative of either much below normal stream flow or low, meaning historical low. In the period of record for the stream flow, it's the lowest value on record. And there's a lot of those dots across the Northeast. So streams, rivers, they're all running exceptionally low. And that's one effect that we've seen from the drought. Obviously the reservoirs are down, but the streams and the rivers really feeling the impact.
This is a really cool image here, the one with all the dots. Yeah, because you see the low stream flow in the Northeast, but then when you go down the coast into the Carolinas, It's some of them are the highest they've ever been because of the
that's a good point.
Rainfall from Matthew. Yeah, this is a really cool graphic.
Quite a difference between it's like 300, 400 miles.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll do it for our tweets this week. But before we get to Dom, I wanted to do my read of the week. I actually haven't done it the past 2 weeks, but thought I'd start it back up. This week, my read of the week is meteorologist Brad Panovich's blog. He posts on there from time to time. And this week, he had a great post about the forecast and the communication of Hurricane Matthew. He argued that the forecast was really good, but the communication, there was some room for improvement there. He mentions that there is a good emphasis on the rainfall and the surge from National Weather Service and local METs, but there seemed to be too much emphasis on the exact track of Matthew, and it kind of got people bogged down because it didn't actually make landfall, and that kind of, you know, gave people a little more, I guess, a feeling of safety, where in some areas along the coast you really didn't, you shouldn't have had that because the impacts were still going to be felt. So if you haven't checked out his blog yet, go on and check it out. I believe it's weatherbrad.com is where he posts all of his stuff. So check that out.
And now we're going to move on to the main part of the show, and that is with Dominic Ramuni of the Weather Channel. We want to learn all about Dominic from the early days to his Weather Channel days, and get some fun facts sprinkled in between, spice things up. So Dominic, start us off. Tell us how you got into weather.
Oh, that's a loaded question, Tyler. You know, a lot of people, I think, have a defining moment in their childhood, meteorologists, that is, that are like, oh, you know, so or some big winter storm that really sparks their interest in weather. For me, it was more, I think, a series of events. You know, growing up in the early 2000s, we had such big snowstorms. We had the President's Day snowstorm in 2003. We actually had a pretty major bust back in 2001, if you remember. And stuff like that really got me intrigued. And then as I got older, I mean, I got into tropical weather. It was just one of those things, you know, like yourself, Tyler, and Dakota, and many others. You know, as you grow up, you just realize this is what I have a passion for.
So,
and in the Lehigh Valley, right?
The Lehigh Valley. Grew up in eastern Pennsylvania, a town called Easton, about 60 miles north of Philadelphia. You know, and that's a good location too, because we got all four seasons. We got the snowstorms, we got the big nor'easters, but we also got, you know, a lot of severe weather in the summer.
And so you went to Penn State, got your degree, and
well, you're
now you're at the
chapters here, Dakota.
I'm skipping a few chapters here. You know, it's a long book, and we gotta, you know, get
the viewers are bleeding off quickly.
Yeah, we got to get to the end here. You know, actually, Dom, I wanted to say thank you. I heard this is being simulcast on the Weather Channel tonight, which is
TWC 0.2.
Yeah,
we're gonna kick the weather geeks out of business.
Go ahead.
Yeah, anyways, so okay, so yeah, just lay it down. What do you do at the Weather Channel, from day to day and kind of in a long term thing? What do you do there?
Sure. Well, I mean, if you're familiar with the biz in TV, I'm a weather producer, and my role is twofold. Put together the graphics, you know, that you use on air, that the meteorologist is pointing at behind you on the screen. Or if I'm not doing that, I will arrange the graphics that someone else made into a story that then the on-camera guy or gal can use to tell the you know, weather of the day.
So you're the one to complain to if we have an issue with one of the graphics up there?
Well, I mean, we have a forwarding address I could send you.
Complaints at weatherchannel.com.
I saw that Vermont was placed in South Dakota on a graphic.
I feel like you're making that up, Tyler.
Maybe my memory is sketchy. I'm not sure.
Yeah. You know, and I will say, I started off, I graduated this past spring from Penn State, like you mentioned, Dakota. And as I was looking for a job, you know, I saw this opening for an internship at the Weather Channel. And I thought, you know, what the heck do I have to lose? I don't have a job yet. Well, what's so bad about an internship? So I applied for the internship, got the internship, and then, you know, ultimately it led to into the full-time position I'm at now. So, you know, if I give a little piece of advice, it would be not to shy away from something that at first you might think, well, I should be looking for a job, shouldn't I? Well, I mean, I was looking for a job, right, and I got the job. It just took a little bit longer.
You got to our last question, actually.
Get to that at the end of the show. We have plenty of time to talk before we get there. So you're working at the Weather Channel as a meteorological content producer, and there have obviously been some big storms in the last couple of weeks. Matthew, even back to Hermine. So we had Hermine, Matthew, and now Nicole. Probably didn't cover Nicole with the intensity that you covered the last two.
Sure.
But a lot of people would say that these storms were very important for the Weather Channel. The Weather Channel almost needed an active period of tropical weather because it's been so quiet for so many years strung together. So not that you have many years to look back on and compare to because you just arrived, but how have the last couple of weeks been?
They've been busy. You know, taking us back to Hermine, I would joke to a couple of my coworkers that it was baby's first hurricane since, you know, it was my first run at what we do there. And it was a lot. We would work 12-hour shifts and then go home for 12 hours and come back in. And we did it day after day. Schedule didn't matter at that point. It was just you come in and you do what you can. You know, it's all hands on deck 24/7. They bring in food to keep you fed. We have briefings every few hours with a lot of the senior meteorologists. You know, it's actually pretty, you know, I'm trying to thread the needle here. It's exhilarating for a weather weenie like myself to, you know, come into this environment. You know, I've always looked up to watching as a kid and then becoming a part of the organized chaos, as I call it, inside the newsroom.
It has to be very exciting. Now, during storm coverage, how many of you is there working at any given time?
Your
position, yeah.
During storm coverage, we probably have about a dozen.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, all hands on deck. People come in. You know, and we do what we can. We're all divided up into different shows. You know, particularly right now, I work on AMHQ early, if you've ever seen it. It's like probably the highest rated show on the Weather Channel at the moment. But I can't take all the credit for that.
Wow, Tommy, look at you.
And what is your shift? Your normal shift when there's not a storm?
Yeah, my normal shift, I work Wednesday through Sundays. Wednesday through Friday, I'm overnights. Preparing for the AMHQ, and then Saturday and Sunday I'm on standby for severe cut-ins, and that's basically if there's a severe thunderstorm or severe weather of any kind across the country that warrants an immediate cut-in to that area, I'm there and ready to put on a show.
So overnight, does that mean you go in at 11 p.m.?
I usually come in about 1, and it's definitely tough to get used to, but I'm sure many in the profession you know, have much more experience with this than I do. It's
so you
part of the job.
Yeah, 1 on the 3 weekdays, and what time on the weekends?
The weekends are my fun days. I get to come in at 10:30 in the morning.
10:30 in the morning. So that's you have a nice gap between Friday and Saturday morning. So Friday night's open.
Tyler, you don't you know.
Well, I like to calculate things on the fly. Come on.
Yeah, it's Friday night at Penn State down here, you know, every week.
Dom, I wanted to comment on you said you sometimes work overnight, but then sometimes you're working in this, like, this, as you described it, organized chaos.
Yeah.
What's it like to have to kind of, like, jump into that after, you know, doing a few night shifts where it's just kind of dead overall? What kind of things do you have to adjust to do that?
I would say try and get some rest beforehand if you can, because you come in and, I mean, it's almost like a zoo. I mean, everybody's there. The newsroom is buzzing. We're on air. You know, you got all your managers, there. So you kind of need to take a breath. I would say the biggest piece of advice, I mean, weather producers would know this, is you got to stay calm under pressure. You know, this is live TV. So, you know, you gotta just take a breath, you know, and prioritize. What do you need to get done? You know, maybe I need to have a show ready in 2 hours. I got to meet with the other producers, and we got to have a briefing with the on-camera meteorologist, make sure they're up to date with all the information.
And has anything been particularly surprising in that kind of atmosphere? Has there anything that you kind of caught you off guard and you had to adjust to?
You know, I've gotten that question a few times, and I would say really the only thing that's been surprising for me, and it shouldn't have been that surprising, is that a lot of the on-camera guys that, you know, you grew up watching, Chip Cantore, you know, Mike Bettis, Stephanie Abrams, you know, this goes without saying, but obviously they're real people too. So it's pretty cool to see them behind the camera and see, you know, I mean, most of them are typically who you see on screen is who they are, but it's fun to see them a little bit loosened up, so to speak.
Yeah, that makes sense. You don't really realize that they, you know, do all the things that humans do and that regular people do in there.
You know,
have you ever seen Jim Cantore get amped up about something like he does? What is it? Snow.
That's I'm glad you mentioned that, Dakota. That's exactly right. I mean, what you see on screen with Jim Cantore, that's who he is. He gets so amped. I mean, about, you know, whether it's we're looking at a satellite or he's reading a tweet out loud to everybody. I mean, he gets really passionate about it and excited. And it's really cool to be in an environment where you know you're surrounded with people who are exactly like you in that respect.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can't really imagine that.
You know, and I welcome, you know, you guys and anybody who's ever interested in you know, come give a tour. Anybody would be glad to, you know, show you around, show you the studios, introduce you to your favorite meteorologist. It's really a fun time. I know my first day in there, it was like Christmas. I don't know how else to explain it. It was exhilarating.
Yeah. I probably will take you up on that and take a tour. I saw one of our good friends, Rob, was down there and got to meet Jim.
Rob and Kelly. Yeah,
that's great. So what, I don't know, where do you see kind of the future of the Weather Channel? It seems like they've really made a few shifts in their content. Recently, they brought on Weather Geeks with Marshall Shepard, and that's been a great addition. They have AMHQ now, which you're a big part of. Where do you see them going in the future here?
You know, I saw something earlier today that said that standard TV viewership is down 40% in the age group 18 to 24 in the last 5 years. 40%. So, how we get our information, it's changing. And I'm sure the big wigs at the Weather Channel are very familiar with this and are trying to adjust rapidly by, targeting mobile applications and things, you know, things beyond just the TV screen. But it's a question I can't answer, Dakota. You know, I don't think anybody can quite answer it just yet. You know, we need to adapt. I think, you know, any company this in this day and age needs to remain agile. They need to change with the times.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that the Weather Channel was doing live streams on Facebook during Matthew, and I think I saw somewhere where they got 12 million views total over those live streams on Facebook. Yep. That's huge.
I mean, it's, you know, some would say it's bigger than our audience on television. So it's important that we continue to reach out to those who aren't, you know, sitting in front of their TV screen. Our median viewer is nearly 60 years old. You know, so at some point, as those people get older, you know, we're going to have a bigger and bigger problem.
So I'm sure you just leave the TV on in your house with the Weather Channel on.
Oh, you know, my TV, my friend's TV, Dakota, you better have it on right now.
I don't even have cable. No, I don't.
You're one of those guys.
I am.
You know, I moved down here and I asked this, my roommate I was moved into, I said, you know, what's the cable package like? He says, oh, we don't have cable. I said, I work for a cable TV network. I said, we need cable.
Now, I appreciate the conversation that Dakota has sparked here. I want to add in something on that Facebook Live remark. I think Facebook Live is great, but there's a major problem with it. As far as I know, you can't monetize it right now. And I would say the even bigger problem is that Facebook controls it. Facebook has a lot of problems when it comes to, you know, being consistent and telling the truth. So it's a fundamental change from controlling the distribution platform, which is TV. You know, the TV stations control their own platforms right now. And then using Facebook. Facebook is obviously owned by Facebook, not, say, the Weather Channel or NBC or ABC. So it's very dangerous to put all your eggs in a basket that's being controlled by someone else. So I agree, the reach is really impressive. It really is. Things have to change, though. Facebook has to wake up and realize the quality content that's out there and start giving out money. I mean, I think they have signed some deals with bigger groups, but if they want it to be a consistent thing, they've got to respect what the content is.
Yeah, you know, I would counter to that, Tyler. We don't do Facebook Live for free by any means.
Facebook pays you?
A substantial amount of money, actually. We have a contract through Facebook. We have several people from Facebook in-house to basically run the whole show.
Well, what a great way to get that out of you. That's good news. Now, I will say it's not that way for everyone, but that's very encouraging to see.
It is. And your points were valid. You know, certainly, you know, there's no – even with a substantial amount of views, you know, you have to have some way to be able to capitalize on that.
Yeah, you know, and YouTube's done a great job of doing that because you can monetize it, and YouTube makes money and you make money. I think any kind of live streaming platform is a good way to go, you know, nowadays, because I don't watch anything else but stuff I can watch on my laptop. And I know I'm not, you know, alone in that, at least in my age range.
I would say you're missing out on some good stuff on the Weather Channel.
You're right. I mean, you're right. I know. I miss Local on the Eight.
Wait, Local on the Eight doesn't exist anymore?
Because I don't watch, you know, I don't have the Weather Channel.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, though, as I think, Tyler, you alluded to earlier with how the Weather Channel almost needs these storms, right, to drive up their ratings. You know, in a sense, that's true. I mean, obviously, nobody wants these big storms to wreak havoc anywhere. But, you know, being a channel that relies on severe weather, you know, it's our bread and butter. And, you know, for this past storm for Matthew, I will say that we've had the highest ratings we've seen since Hurricane Sandy 4 years ago. So while viewership may be going down, you know, across the board overall, we're still holding strong because weather, I think, is one of those things, you know, people need critical weather information. They're not getting it through their app. Not yet, at least.
I have a question about mobile streaming, and we've brought up the millennials and younger people. What is your show that streams on the app? How does that work?
Okay. I couldn't speak too much to that because that's actually that's a digital product, and IBM owns that portion of it. So I have nothing to do with
So is it produced in the same building?
It is, but it's an entirely different company. I'm not even allowed on the floor.
Oh, so it is. So it's a different floor.
Yeah. Have you been to the Weather Channel, Tyler?
No, I never have. I know it's a multi-story building, though.
Yeah, I think it's eight stories. The top two or three are owned by IBM. And that's basically all of weather.com, all of the mobile applications. That's all run upstairs.
That's very interesting.
Presumably there's a lot of communication, though, between the two, right?
There definitely is. I mean, you know, it has been interesting since they split. What was it, two years ago now, I think? So there's some lingering, you know, residual cooperation between the two. But at the same time, you know, things are essentially independent as far as our digital products go. That's why Weather Channel has launched WeLoveWeather.tv, since they no longer have weather.com.
Wow, that blows my mind.
That's why I'm here.
That's why you're here. So I have a hot topic, winter storm naming. So if, for those of you that don't know, the Weather Channel has been naming winter storms, I think, for 4 years now.
Yeah.
And it's caused a little bit of a stir in the weather community, just because people don't think they need to be named, think it might create confusion. Others, people like it. You know, a place to name winter storms, I believe a local National Weather Service office does. So I'm curious what kind of your take is on that, of naming storms.
I'm not, you know, you meet some people who are so polarized one way or the other, and just, I'm not that type of person. You know, I like to hear both sides. I think there probably is some value in naming, especially these bigger storms that are causing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in damage. If we're naming hurricanes, why not name something that's causing just as much damage? Now, mind you, in that same sense, one might cause a lot greater damage in some instances, but at the same time, you know, it's affecting many more people in some cases, these winter storms. I find it hard to understand why some people would be so against, you know, giving it just a common name that we can all refer to it.
Yeah.
I will say I was originally against the idea or not very fond of it, but yeah, you know, nowadays I don't really see a problem with it. I think a lot of it has to do with a hashtag and ways to link up people on social media and talk about the same topic. And obviously it's tough to come up with a set of criteria, but I will say at one of the AMS conferences, I had the privilege to talk to Tom Nizel, and I was impressed with what he said. I think that's really what sold it for me. Obviously not everyone can have that in-person conversation, but it really convinced me that it wasn't just a gimmick, and there were really people that cared about it and convened behind the scenes to name storms. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it's a good idea in some ways.
I think that's an excellent point, Tyler. You know, people like Nizzle and a bunch of the Mets here at the Weather Channel, they understand, you know, the concerns of the weather community. They get that, and they're putting that ahead of, you know, whatever sort of business practice that upstairs might think is beneficial to them. So, meteorologists really care, obviously.
I'm all on board for naming the winter storms. My only thing is that I kind of wish there was some cooperation and communication between the National Weather Service and Weather Channel, because I think naming storms could benefit the Weather Service in getting, you know, a little more attention to certain storms.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really sound like that's going on at the moment.
Well, I think that's, you know, sort of the ball's in the National Weather Service's court, so to speak.
It is, yeah. Well, maybe we can tweet NWS Podunk and get a response.
You know, and while we're talking about this, I will, if I may, just tease. We are releasing this year's winter storm names this Tuesday, only on the Weather Channel. So please.
Ooh, nice.
Wow, we'll have to put that on our press, you know.
You'll have to get cable, Dakota.
I'll have to get cable. I guess you can't really divulge. They have some interesting names.
Dominic is going to be the D name, I hear.
I can't confirm or deny any of this.
We should get a Nittany, Winter Storm Nittany.
That's true. I'm sure Maria La Rosa would agree with us.
We have a couple people who agree. Winter Storm Joe Pop, maybe.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Dakota won't agree with what I have to say.
I think that's a bad idea.
I love it. What else? What else have we missed? What are the big points that you may want to bring up, Dominic?
Oh. You know, If we can go back for a second to talk about Matthew, I know you guys were talking about it with one of your tweets. And one of you, what you said was very good. I think the forecast was good. I mean, we were talking a matter of miles. The track was off as far as, you know, coming up the Florida coastline in Georgia. But, you know, it's all about people want this deterministic, specific. We want it now. We want the exact, you know, how do we balance that with the uncertainty? And I think the Weather Channel does a good job of trying to effectively communicate that uncertainty, but social media, not our social media, but other, you know, social media accounts, that's where the hype can really build. I think that's part of the problem in weather communication. We need to balance.
Yeah, I like that point. And I would make a counterpoint in that I honestly think that while social media is hugely important, I think, you know, there's a ton of people not on social media that still need a forecast and that still, you know, might not get the certain level of severity that something's going to be. So I think there's, you know, kind of two parts of it. You know, one where social media is hugely important. We need to stay on that. We need to communicate effectively on that. But we also have to worry about people who aren't really a part of that community and are a part of different communities. And I think that was interesting when people were talking about Matthew, it's because at one point it looked like it might affect a lot of old people living in, you know, their retirement homes down there, that unless you have a cool grandma, is not going to be on social media. So that's my, I like your point, Dom. I do.
Oh. So where do we go next?
I guess we could finish up here with our standard final question.
Yeah, the final question that we typically ask our guests is, what sort of advice would you give to someone interested in pursuing meteorology or someone that is currently studying meteorology and is having difficulty?
Well, I can speak to that, Tyler.
Yes.
You know, my advice would be to challenge yourself to be different. You know, if you're doing the same thing as everyone else, you're not going to get ahead. You know, it's those people who challenge themselves, their professors, their employers, everybody they know. Those are the people who make a difference.
Wow. That was amazing, Dom.
Thank you.
I don't know. That really hit me.
You know, you got to speak from the heart with these kind of things.
No, that is a very unique piece of advice that we haven't gotten here before. And that
maybe advice I could use.
Yeah. We all could take a bit of that. Well, thanks so much for chatting with us. This has been great.
You let me go, Dakota.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a couple of suggestions for your show, if I may.
Absolutely.
Uh-oh.
Number one, you know, I won't name any names, but there is a competing show on cable TV that talks about, you know, the weather community, weather buzz, and they have something called Geek of the Week. I think maybe you should have, like, Junkie of the Week, or maybe, like, Junkie of the Day.
Ooh, Junkie. Wow, come on now. We're not a full-time operation.
You know, it builds promotion. It makes others feel good about themselves in the community. And then, you know, on top of that, maybe you should get some sponsorships, maybe, you know, maybe Home Depot or
Hey, we're taking sponsorships. Is the Weather Channel or Weather Company interested?
with a competing.
I don't know if you could call us competing, Dom.
I like I said, this might be one of the highest rated weather junkies. You could probably tell me better than I could.
Well, let's see. There's three viewers right now, so I don't think so.
Of our viewers are on demand.
They are. Most of our viewers are on demand. But when Paul Kosin was on, we had over 300 live viewers.
Wow,
it's gonna be tough to beat that.
That would be. But maybe if I become a recurring guest, people will you know start to demand it almost.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, I like your advice to us and to others. So, Dom, it's been a pleasure, and we'll be glad to have you on, you know, sometime in the future.
Great. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it.
For Dominic, Dakota,
I was going to plug stuff here, Tyler.
Yeah.
So you can follow us at theweatherjunkies.com. We're also on Facebook. You can listen to the this podcast on SoundCloud, YouTube, iTunes. If you're on iTunes, go ahead and give us a rating, a review. And now, Tyler, send us away.
Yeah, for Dakota, Dominic, and myself, thank you for listening to this week's show. We'll be back next week with another brand new episode, and we hope that you'll join us right back here then. Until then, have a great weekend.
Julia, we got cows.